from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. There's a growing movement in education around the country. Teachers, now whole schools, are flipping. Rather than lecture at school and assign homework for home, teachers are sending students home with online lectures and having their class complete what would normally be homework at school. Fans say it's a whole new world, a pattern flipped and more effective. This hour on Point, Flipped Schools and the Future of Education. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Have you seen it, done it, got the idea? Getting homework done in school, fitting in lectures at home. Why so much buzz on this? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Lots of people toe-dipping, experimenting, and more than that. Here's an online lecture we found on YouTube, narrated a slideshow here. PowerPoint slides, not the teacher on screen. Teacher Miss Bonk explains atmospheric science to middle schoolers. The entire lecture, 4.5 minutes long.
Hello, class. This is a video for your astronomy unit with me, Miss Bonk. Today's topics will be Earth's atmosphere. Scientists have given the layers of the atmosphere distinct names. The lowest layer is the troposphere, which is from 6 to 20 kilometers above the Earth's surface. We will be focusing mainly on SI units, but I have included miles and inches because I know that those units are more familiar for you.
Miss Bonk delivering the lecture on video in class. Maybe she's flipped, doing the homework in class. We go to a school that has done a lot of this, been right out front with us right now from Clinton Township in Michigan is Greg Green. He's principal of Clinton Dale High School. It's roughly 30 miles north of Detroit. He's been principal there for 12 years. His entire school flipped 3 years ago and became the first school in the country, as far as we know, to do it. Performance at the school, he says, has improved dramatically. Principal Green, Greg Green, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Why did you do it? Why did you flip?
Well, I mean, there's several reasons why we flipped. One, we weren't successful in the traditional model. Our students, over and over, our students were frustrated with the homework process, the traditional homework process, where, you know, they didn't have the support necessarily at home. Students' parents didn't necessarily, have the expertise or the familiarity with the topic. So, you know, it was difficult for them to help the student. Also, they may not have the means, per se, like the home environment to duplicate the learning process or the learning environment there. Also, they may not have the supplies or the softwares available for students, you know, such as an internet hookup or even a graphing calculator. They may not be able to afford that. So those are things we needed in order to, you know, make our learning environment conducive to, you know, our students.
So Principal Green, describe for us how it works at Clinton Dale. Take any class you like and just explain, how does this work compared to a traditional pattern of teaching and homework?
Sure. Well, you know, what we do is we share information. Now, there's a number of ways we share. We just don't share information through video. What we do is we want our students to do simple assignments at home that, you know, is independent of parents and really allows them to review information at home. But the real practice goes into the classroom where the expert's there, where the technology is there, where, you know, other peers that are going through the process are there. And so we enrich the learning environment so that, you know, we have on-time guidance and also, you know, the necessary tools to make progress in the classroom. And I think that's where the magic begins. You know, it's really not a technology plan. What we do is we use technology that'll we reverse the process and use the technology so that we can implement the research that tells us how do we advance student achievement. You know, we need on-time help. Well, if a teacher, you know, has students do homework at home and maybe turns that assignment in, and then, you know, it's 2 weeks later until they get the feedback, then it's not as effective as it would be if we're helping the student right there and then. And we may go over, you know, some samples or some simple exercises for them to review at home if they're absent or they need to review it multiple times for understanding. You know, we're able to address those needs as well. And then the teacher's there to, you know, help with any questions that they have. They can also work collaboratively with peers because we know that students need to work and learn how to work with one another in, let's say, in a work environment and also an educational environment. We also feel that that it's just a better, you know, for assessment. We know where our students are at immediately. We know where their learning needs are, so we can address those appropriately.
You know, because they're doing their homework in school, in the classroom.
Yeah, in the classroom. So we know where those troubles are, and then we can address them immediately. So what it does is, you know, in order to create an effective learning environment, what you need to do is you need to get real-time feedback. Well, in the traditional model, how do you do that when they're doing homework at home? And then you're always a day behind. Whereas in a flipped classroom, you know, even if you take technology out of it, because a lot of people argue about the technology pieces. You know, we think that they're really important, but they're only important because we use those tools to also to create the environment so that research supports that environment. So if it says that we need real-time feedback, well, how do we do that if we're doing homework at home without expertise available to us, without tools available to us,
yep,
without a home that might not be conducive to learning?
So old model, teacher stands in front of the class, gives a lecture on whatever the subject is, assigns the homework, students do it at home, bring it back in, it's graded, they get it back, kind of a slow sequence. New model, in part, they grab that lecture outside of the classroom. We've got a little tape here of one of your teachers. This is Ms. Schneider, Clintondale High in Michigan, and her lecture on Algebra 1, the entire lecture, 25 minutes long. You see her PowerPoint slides and sometimes a red pen underlining a word or number. Here's just an example of what the student might take away from school.
Variables are letters that represent unknown numbers. In algebra, we're always working with variables. We use letters to stand for numbers, and we're always trying to figure out what the numbers are.
Principal Greg Green from Clintondale High School is with us. So typically, Principal Green, how will your students hear these lectures? Are you assuming they have access to a laptop or computer or desktop or a smartphone or something outside of school?
Well, we surveyed our students, and 82% have access to the Internet. But we also make our videos available via, you know, desktop, mobile, you know, mobile platforms, so that students don't always use the same device. They
yep.
don't always have a laptop. They
mm-hmm.
may have a cell phone. So that's where tools like YouTube allow us to make it multi-device capable.
And how do you picture them taking these lectures and this instruction on board? Are they sitting at home at a desk? Are they on the bus on the way home? Are they at the, you know, on the bench at a football game? What?
Well, they could be. I mean, it really depends on, you know, where they're successful at. I mean, some students like the quiet of their home. Some students have time, you know, on a bus where they'd rather prefer putting their headphones in and just using the time effectively there. Sometimes, you know, students are riding to athletic events and they need to watch the video in order to know what to do in class the next day. So, I mean, that's the beauty of it. It's available to them 24/7. And it really makes it flexible and conducive to their schedule.
Do the teachers like it, working hands-on with the students on their homework in class instead of giving a lecture and then grading later?
Well, what we found was that teachers told us that they were pretty frustrated that students weren't completing their homework. And when they did complete it, it was so far off base that they didn't really understand how the student didn't get what they were going over in class
mm-hmm.
or, you know, what the lesson was about. So what this allows them to do is to actually make progress with the student, to actually hold their hand step by step so that we can ensure that the student does get it the proper way. And, you know, one of my geometry teachers, when we first started the flip, said, you know, my homework turn-in rate was about 30%. You know, students just didn't do it, and if they couldn't do it, they just didn't turn it in. And so he said, you know, the first day that I did it, I had 120 of 121 assignments finished.
That's a whole new feeling. I mean, you've got a fairly tough school district to work with, socially, economically. A lot of these kids, as you say, don't have great situations at home. And you had high failure rates. I'm looking back here, 52% in English, 44% in math, science, 41% and on. And you brought those down early on very dramatically, from 52% failure rate to 19% in English, 44% to 13% in math.
Yeah.
How's that borne out over time, Principal Green?
Well, our failure rate's just under 10%, and it's been like that for the last 2 years. And we see that, you know, equate into higher graduation rates around 90%, which is, you know, people say that's, you know, a pretty amazing feat based on our demographics. The thing is that our students get help. They get support in the learning process. You know, this model works better for us because we can replicate a positive learning environment every single day, whereas I'm dependent upon others who may not be able to replicate that as much at home. And we're really asking our homes to teach physics and advanced algebra and chemistry because that's where they practice at. And is that, would that be inappropriate for the football coach? Or inappropriate for the Spanish teacher, inappropriate for the vocational teacher who, knowing that these parents don't have the skill set, but we assume that because they took math class or they went through algebra, most of us as adults only had to maybe go through algebra or geometry, but now that we've raised the rigor in schools, how do we most appropriately support that?
Don't know much about history, don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about flipped schools. It's the hot new thing in education. Do the homework at school. Hear the lecture, watch it at home. Greg Green is with us from Clinton Township, Michigan, principal of Clintondale High School, the first school that's 30 miles north of Detroit, the first school in the country to flip entirely. Performance, he says, has gone up pretty dramatically. It may not be for everybody, but a lot of people are interested these days, schools or individual classes, where they're flipping. Here's another example. This is just last fall. Allie Halsey, a high school teacher in California, assigned this flipped video lecture she created for AP U.S. History. You see her PowerPoint slides, which include some pictures and maps. Full lecture is 20 minutes long. Here's just a snippet.
So make sure that as we go through each event, you're going to state the importance. If you need to pause the video, obviously you can, so you can write down a few things. Next event you're going to put on your timeline are the Navigation Acts. One thing to remember is the Navigation Acts, although they were implemented, they were not actually enforced.
Of course, a big proponent of this has been Salman Khan. We had him on a couple of years ago, the guy who started doing little lessons out of a closet for, what was it, his niece, now runs the largest free online comprehensive education network with help from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Khan Academy, becoming a resource for schools that want to flip. Here's a clip from him, Salman Khan giving a biology lesson on misconceptions of evolution and natural selection, whole thing 19 minutes long.
Evolution or natural selection is not just a series of progressive steps where we'll slowly and slowly become, or any organism becomes kind of a better and more intelligent and faster animal. Evolution really is the basis of modern biology. If you want to understand how the flu works, or if the human genome, or if you wanted to understand heredity, evolution is a cornerstone of that.
Greg Green is using this model in his school in Michigan. He's had good results. We'll hear more from him and from education experts looking at this. Not everybody's crazy about it. Let's hear from our listeners as well. Tanya in Boston, thank you for calling, Tanya. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited that you guys are talking about this because flipped classrooms is something that I just really believe in. So I'm a first-year medical student here in Boston, and it's a trend throughout medical schools throughout the country right now to actually record their lectures as well as having live lectures. That's not quite a flipped classroom because the lecture option is still available. But as a result, I mean, I prefer not to go to class because I can watch these lectures at home, and it's more efficient because I can watch them at double time speed.
Okay.
So not only am I getting time back, but also, you know, I am able to pause the lecture. If I miss something, I can really think about it. If there's a concept that I'm not quite getting, and also take time to think about questions that I might have rather than asking right away in the classroom. If I have a question, take it in, think about it, and then maybe bring it to the professor afterwards. What I never miss, what we also have, are these small group sessions, small group learning sessions where we look at cases. And it's very active learning. It's kind of like what your guest is talking about in terms of doing homework in the classroom. It's along those lines. It's just, I can't tell you how much better it is for my learning, at least.
But Tanya, you're in med school. In med school, what does it mean?
Right.
You surely don't sit in class and do homework in med school. It means mainly, I guess, getting your lecture online.
So we get our lectures online, but and we don't quite have homework. But what we do have are these group sessions where we're given some sort of case, And we use the things that we've learned in our lectures to solve the case that we've been presented with. And we do it kind of as a group with an instructor leading the group.
So flip with a difference. A lot of lines just blurring and breaking down here. Learn online, jump in together as a group. Tanya, I appreciate your call. One more right here. Kathleen in Lexington, Massachusetts. Hi, Kathleen. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for having my call, taking my call. Mm-hmm. You know, I heard about the flipped classroom a couple of years ago, and I used to be a teacher many, many years ago before my kids were born. And what really surprised me about the flipped classroom was that in the year 2013, we still have an education system, at least at the secondary level, in which lectures are the dominant form of instruction. 20 years ago in my teacher education program, that was a no-no. We were told, do not lecture. So if I was still teaching right now and a principal said, oh, we want you to, you know, film your lectures and you'll do the homework in class, my reaction would be, I don't give lectures.
What did they want? What do you want instead of a lecture, Kathleen?
Well, I mean, for example, now, I mean, I'm coming at this from, I was a history teacher, so, I, you know, different disciplines have different needs. But, you know, we would do a group activity, you know, something like we're studying the Roman Empire, like, you know, we're going to look at Claudius, thumbs up or thumbs down. Is he a good emperor? Is he a bad emperor? And I would, that was what they would work on in groups. And then we would come back together as a class and discuss what they discovered, what they found. If you're studying the American Revolution, instead of delivering a lecture about the Boston Massacre, was it really a massacre? You could have your students reading primary source documents from different perspectives, and then when you come together as a class, they realize, wait a minute, there are two very different opinions about what was going on here. That's not something I could film to have kids watch at home. I mean, that doesn't work. I would think you just want it to be more student-driven, in the classroom, discussion-based.
Yeah, very interesting, Kathleen. Like, I appreciate your experience there. Greg Green, what about it? What the question you're hearing there, the cut-and-dry concern?
I think she really makes a good point. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think that flip is about the video, and really, the video allows us to cover content that's essential. So, you know, we may cover something that's essential to that unit, but what the caller has mentioned is exactly what we're hoping for, is that teachers are working collaboratively with students in class and furthering their understanding so that, you know, the model of learning or practice is really done in the classroom with the experts. And you see in both cases, you see that the expert has helped guiding the discussion and helped giving immediate feedback, and the peers are actually contributing to that as well. So we have even more expertise, you know, given to helping students along, because not only can the teacher be experts, but students can be experts as well. And so what you see is a more supportive learning environment. And then if we record essential components, it doesn't have to be a lecture, it can be, you know, how we're going to go about these groups or what have you, then what happens is students have a reference point. And also, we have a more transparent environment so that parents know exactly what's going on in class as well.
How much time are your students spending at home, online, watching, listening, interacting, you know, as opposed to doing homework, but getting these essential messages you're talking about?
I think, you know, early on, our videos, like the one that you showed, you know, played, you know, 25 minutes. And, you know, that was an early on video. Usually our videos are maybe 7 to 10 minutes. And then when we survey students and staff, they're about 2 to 3 times a week. So they may introduce something that way, and then for 2 days they work on it and may have another introductory video.
I wondered if I read about this, if it wasn't just less school in the end, because 7 to 10 minutes 2 or 3 times a week, that's not the same as 5 days of hour-long lectures. Now, maybe that's not even the format you want, but then you're only doing homework in class, which is often an hour or less. Does this just mean less studying, all in all, principal?
Well, I think because we can, you know, technology allows us to rewind it. And I think that we can play that over and over and over. We don't have to give 12 examples of the same thing anymore. We can use technology that allows us to rewind it 1,000 times and also share collaboratively. So we're much more efficient in our process. And I think that, you know, some students choose not to even do it at home. So we can't anticipate, you know, we can't just assume that students would try it and do it at home, because a lot of times what we're seeing is students just give up and they just choose to fail at that point. And so we're really setting them up for failure in a situation.
You mean with the old model where they just didn't do the homework and so they got zipped?
Yeah. So if you have no help and you have no assistance and you have no tools, then how do you actually perform the exercise?
Greg Green is at Clintondale High School in Michigan, the first in the country to flip entirely homework in school, lectures and guidance online at home. Principal Green, please stand by there. I want to welcome into our conversation from Madison, Wisconsin, Richard Halverson. He's a professor in the Department of Leadership and Policy Analysis at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, author of Rethinking Education in the Age of Technology. Richard Halverson, thank you very much for being here. What do you think of the flipping trend, sir?
Well, I think that the schools are really faced with a challenge of integrating technology meaningfully into classroom activities. Technologies like the internet and new media technologies are changing how people think about teaching and learning and just navigating everyday life. And schools have really been behind in this this process. And I think the many schools have responded historically to technological developments by buying the hardware and then sticking with the old practices. And the flipped classroom provides a really nice model for integrating new media technologies into the everyday practices of classrooms. It doesn't require teachers to change their practices that much. They still can try to present information and then follow up and help students understand the information. But it allows schools to participate in much more distributed technological networks for instruction. It really opens up the classroom. We see many teachers beginning with videotaping their own lectures and then realizing that the content that's available online through Khan Academy and Brightstorm and YouTube is so much richer and so much more engaging than what they can produce themselves that the classroom really turns into a distributed learning environment where kids are basically creating their own digital learning spaces.
It sounds in a way, Professor, as though you're saying flipping the school experience, homework in school, lecture at home, in a way that's just a way station on loosening up the whole structure.
I think that's right. Historically, schools have been in charge of learning, which means they've been in charge of information, and they control what information gets to students. But, you know, in 2013, students all over the world are constructing their own digital learning environments based on their own interests, and schools just don't have as strong of a control on the access to knowledge anymore. And I think the flipped classroom provides a really nice model for schools and teachers to sort of ease into this new digital world where we have multiple sources of knowledge but still retain control over what students learn in the sense of homework and grades and standards and that sort of thing.
Principal Green, are your teachers using videos of their own lectures or versions for their kids here in this flipped structure, or are they turning to others, to Salman Khan or, I don't know, Best in Class for chemistry lectures?
It's like Richard mentions. I think we're most interested in getting the best lesson, you know, whether it comes from Sal Khan or whether it comes from another entity. I think you know, we feel that our students, like all students, deserve the very best. And sometimes other people have a better presentation than we do, and we accept that fact. So if it's out there to be used and it's available and we can use it, you know, have the rights to use it, then we look and see if that's maybe a better piece for our students to look at and view.
Let me go to Mike calling from Brant Lake, New York. Mike, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi.
As a school board member, I'm interested in anything that'll improve education for the kids and doesn't cost us anything. But I'm wondering about the mechanics of it. Do you do it classroom by classroom? Do you do it across your whole school? What are the mechanics of the process?
Mike, thanks. Greg, what's your advice here? If Mike's school district wants to take this on board, how do you integrate it? How do you implement?
Well, we call it incubation, and I think we incubate it into, you know, just a small number of teachers at first, because you obviously, if you're interested in flipping, you want to make it what's best for your school. You know, what necessarily is best in my school may not fit your school. So you want to simply incubate it and work through the model so that, you know, if other people want to adopt it, then you can seamlessly, you know, have a seamless process for them. And so you start with maybe 2 to 4 teachers that have like content areas so they can share the resources and so forth. And then, you know, the principal works at just simply get some simple technologies that make, you know, that allow a teacher to still work with students. I think one of the important points that we learned over time was that we want to make sure that the technologies that we choose are very simple and fast and allow for some automation so that teachers can work with kids.
Now, what do you mean by technologies that you choose? What technologies are required here? I thought they just went home and, you know, fired up the laptop and watched the instruction. And what else do you have?
Not talking about students. We're talking about teachers.
Okay.
Teachers would, you know, sometimes we may use a program that automates the grading of things so that teachers can spend more time with kids. We may do push messaging, like a service called Remind 101 that allows teachers to safely text kids their assignments. So it's a what we call push notifications that students, you know, can find the assignment easily and quickly, and teachers can do it quickly and easily. So what we want is we want that teacher to be working with that student. And so we use technologies that allow us to do that more efficiently.
Richard Halverson, are we managing this technological evolution well? I mean, as I listen, there are many things that sound admirable here, but I could also see this kind of collapsing into a mess.
Well, I think it's in the midst. I think we're in the middle of a transformation where schools are starting to embrace information technologies. The next big leap, I think, is going to be from standards-based learning to interest-based learning. Schools for a long time have been in the business of knowing all the answers that the students need to learn, right? So, mm-hmm. So you go to school and really somebody knows to answer the answer to every question you're going to ask in school. And new media technologies really allow for students to develop their own learning environments. And I think we're coming to a point just around the bend where high schools, for example, are going to be much more broader institutions that really broker student access to the kinds of courses and learning experiences that interest them as well as the ones that schools mandate. And so the flipped classroom to me is sort of a step on the way to a much more broad scale world of education that is increasingly interest based as well as standards based.
What's the advantage of that? What if the interest is, you know, hot cars? We've been pushing standards for a long time.
Our principal is from outside of Detroit. There's lots of lives to be made by that begin with the interest in hot cars. I think that one of the big problems that we have in our junior high and high school experience for many students in the United States is lack of interest. The courses aren't compelling. Many students, I think, look at the possibility of going to college and getting jobs. And the prospects are much more dim than it was for their parents. And so anything that we can do to interest kids to take learning seriously, I think, is worth pursuing.
We pass, we fail, and only time will tell if we'll ever make it through these teenage years. In my high school, there's some who study for their entrance exams, some who just wanna play guitar in some rock and roll band. And in my high school, the seniors just cannot wait for June, but they don't realize that we grow up way too soon. They'll be doctors, they'll be lawyers, teachers and lawyers.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about flipped schools, the sort of hot new thing in education. Do the homework at school. Here, watch the lecture at home, online. Greg Green is with us from Clinton Township, Michigan, principal at Clintondale High School, the first in the country to go entirely this way, to flip. Richard Halverson is with us from Madison, Wisconsin, author of Rethinking Education in the Age of Technology. We'll hear in a moment from an education consultant who's not so sure. Greg, Richard, lots of response online. Barry says, the flipped classroom model allows for more group discussion and more individual mentoring. There's upside. NARPAC DC says, unmentioned point. School flipping. Folks at home get to learn, too, who'd never go back to school. Free adult ed. I guess parents watching those lectures or lessons over the kids' shoulders. Charles says teachers at Revere High School in Massachusetts are flipping the learning for our students. Sounds like it's happening there right now. A little Dissent here from James says, absolutely not. I'm against a rush to over-deploy a technology with little regard to how teachers teach and how learners learn. Well, look at that. I want to hear from our listeners as well. Tim in Suffolk, Virginia. Tim, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just want to add a quick comment to the conversation about authenticity. There was a caller previously that stated that some teachers who felt that their instruction wasn't either rich enough or good enough to convey online have turned to, you know, Khan and some of the other sites out there. And I feel that as a flipped classroom teacher myself, that having my own face out there conveying my content to my kids provides a more authentic experience. And I want to know if the panelists agree or disagree.
So is it best practice, Greg Green, for the teacher's face and lecture to be the one that the child takes home, that they're going to come back the next day and work with that teacher? What do you say, Greg?
Yeah, I mean, that's ideal. I mean, I think, you know, we would like all our teachers to be comfortable in that arena. And I think, you know, and obviously, you know, most of ours are comfortable, but we also realize that some of us may be not comfortable with the technology, or they're just not comfortable talking, you know, on a microphone and so forth. But we see some value in using video so that students can repeat the message and have that transparency, so for parents and so forth at home. So, you know, we give the, you know, teachers the ability to, you know, choose, you know, do they want to use their own videos or do they want to actually use somebody else's? But it has to have meet certain criteria. They're just not choosing videos to make just because it's online. It's, they have to meet certain criteria as far as curriculum and expectations that we have for our students.
When you pick up outside video, one thing that surprised me is I expected to see teachers' faces, but in fact, most of your stuff is, most of what's out there, Salman Khan included, is basically PowerPoint or video of math equations. You're not seeing a teacher's face. Is that not part of, I mean, here I am in radio, so what am I talking about? But I would have thought that maybe that facial expression, that presence was important.
Greg. I think as teachers develop video, some people are really comfortable with it early on, and then others, you know, are more comfortable as they go. And so I think it doesn't matter to us, you know, it's whatever the teacher is comfortable with, but it has to fall within, you know, certain guidelines. The messaging has to be on target and has to be, you know, more efficient as we go. You know, we started out with 25-minute lectures, and we would feedback we've received from students with maybe they're a little too long or dry or what have you. And so we try and reduce that time that they, you know, we don't have to give so many examples because our students say, hey, listen, I can hit replay. And also what we do is we also have videos done by teachers doing them together. So it's more of a, just like we're having a conversation point, it keeps people engaged in the conversation longer than rather than doing it by themselves.
The time of the lecture is going down and down. I don't know what to think of it. David in Williamstown, Massachusetts. David, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom. And I just want to say I've been out of the classroom for about 15 years. I was teaching grades 7 through 12.
Okay.
And I have some mixed feelings about this. Your mention of there being really no, or in the videos, there not being a lot of pictures of the teachers themselves. I was kind of brought along that teaching was sort of, it had some theater involved with it. And I'd like to think that ultimately what we want to get after here maybe is sort of a blend of technology with the theater. But the analogy I use with your screener is that it would be like going to see Into the Woods or Streetcar Named Desire or watching it, say, being streamed or on television versus actually being in the theater. And one of the things about teaching is that from year to year, yeah, you're teaching the same material, but you're getting a different class, and there's a dynamic and sort of an organic interaction between you as the teacher and the student. And you're not exactly providing entertainment up there, but there's a give and take, and I would hate for these videos at some point to become more like TED Talks and have to be, like, so entertaining.
Yeah.
But you're also trying to get that element in there of actual human interaction, and I can't help keep coming back to this whole theater analogy that everybody knows what it's like to see a great performance in the theater with surround around everything versus watching a 7 to 10 minute something that's sounding like it's venturing towards a TED Talk. And the last point I want to make, I'll be very quick, is that a lot of learning happens outside the classroom. And often kids collaborate and talk about their problem sets, they kvetch, or their project, or they're working on a student newspaper for the, you know, class, like a class project. I can't see them necessarily, say, seventh graders getting together to talk about the video that's 7 to 10 minutes long. Hopefully they'll watch it, and after that they'll come into class and probably expect the teacher to still repeat it.
Good points all, David. That's the classic ideal, is the teacher present in the room, sort of sweeping kids off to this great learning experience. Richard Halverson, what about this issue of presence, depth of interaction, the theatrical element here that may be important in person? What are you thinking as you hear our former teacher, Richard?
Well, I think that, I mean, we have to remember one of the reasons why the lecture is still around as a learning a teaching tool. It's because it's the oldest one we have. Storytelling is the way that people orient themselves in the world. The stories that your parents tell you, or the ones you hear at home, or your early identity narratives, are the ones that situate you in the world, and they provide an anchor for all the other things that we know. And so stories that are well told constitute who we are. And I think a sort of taken for granted aspect of the art of teaching is interactive storytelling. Good teachers understand that when they're lecturing, it's a conversation that they're having with their students, even though the students may not be speaking. They're always checking for understanding, calibrating their examples to make sure that the students understand what's going on.
Can you get that online?
I'm thinking the more that we separate storytelling from an audience, in-person audience, you lose that interactive component of narrative, and it turns into information.
I want to bring Diana Laufenberg into our conversation from Williamsburg, Virginia. She's an education consultant and lead teacher for Inquiry Schools. It's a new nonprofit, supports project-based one-on-one teaching and learning environments. She's taught 7th through 12th grade social studies at the Philadelphia Magnet School, the Science Leadership Academy. Diana Laufenberg, you've been listening along and thinking about flipped schools. You've got a lot of experience as a teacher. What do you think of this new formula?
My concerns related to this surround just the whole discussion about how we're engaging students in their own learning. And I don't vary so much from what Dr. Halverson is saying, but I would qualify that that's not exactly what he's purporting to support, isn't exactly what the flipped is also talking about. Part of it is that it's a little bit like jargon, and it's not talking about the professionalism of teaching and learning. A second piece that I'd like to bring up is that what I want the conversation to be around is what is now possible for students and teachers in a heavily connected, information-dense environment, and what role does school then play in that process. Less about what work we do at home, what work we do at school, but rather what does meaningful, engaged, innovative, creative work look like for the average high school student, and then how do we make that happen?
Can we just start with the flipped formula and then take your thoughts from there? But, the fundamental idea here is get some of that lecturing out of the classroom, get the more engaged work around homework in the classroom. What do you make of that, Diana?
And I would just offer that that dichotomy, I think we're beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
The way to engage kids with information is to draw them into wanting to know rather than just saying, here's what you need to know, and then we're going to do something with it. I taught in history, government, geography areas for a long time, and rarely does a kid come into your class and say, boy, that war of 1812, I just can't wait to know more. But the job is, how do you engage them, and how do you involve them in their own inquiry process to have their own questions, to look at their own research, and then send them down that path? The teacher becomes the guide in that process of how do I find good information, how do I mass research, how do I know what I know, how do I make sure that's good resources, all of those things, rather than just providing it for them, which is kind of what the flipped model is proposing, which is, here's your nugget of information that you need to know, I will give it to you here, then we'll come back tomorrow and discuss it. It's still not reaching the full potential, I believe, of what technology can offer for a kid, and the type of work that I've done and I'm continuing to do with the Science Leadership Academy, bore that out day in and day out with a technology-rich environment, that the lecture really isn't the most compelling piece of this conversation, getting rid of it or putting it somewhere else, but rather, how do kids access information? And often it isn't when the teacher just tells it to them. That isn't the most compelling thing we can do with the tool.
Lots of options for interaction with the digital realm, and yet there's this issue of the teacher. Eric in Boca Raton, Florida. Eric, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom. How are you? I have a quick concern. I want to know whether or not this is the start of the digitization of teachers, to the point that they'll eventually be removed from their jobs because everything that they would have said has gotten recorded.
So everything's been taped and we don't need them anymore. Principal Green, what do you think?
Well, let me just, you know, echo. I agree with some of the statements that Diana says. Yeah, you know, our classrooms look a lot different. You know, we're actually taking students through all those processes that, you know, Dan talked about. And it's the how and the whys and the what's in the classroom. And that's really the essentially, that's why we need a teacher. We need an expert to help us through that. And we see that throughout our lives. And so, you know, in career professions, I take my taxes to an accountant because I really don't know how to do them. And so I need somebody to help either guide me through that process or help me through that process. And then we see that throughout our life. And I think that's what we want our classrooms to look like. And we use the technology, the tool that allows us to free up the time in the classroom to actually be able to do that, to guarantee that that happens. And I think, you know, we get so caught up in the flip and this lecture and the video online and so forth. And really what it does is it makes the teacher one of the most essential components in the classroom, because where else are they going to get the expertise? They may get the information, but they don't know how to put the puzzle together. And I think that's where, you know, we really need our teachers to be able to help our students in the system. And, you know, doing all those great things that Dan talked about, that's exactly what we want our classrooms to look like.
But in the end, do you have just less lecture time? You're saying you bring it down from 25 to 3 or 4 minutes. I mean, I'm not sure where that goes. Are you saying that that kind of conveyance of information just ultimately blinks out, becomes irrelevant? How can that be, Principal?
Well, I mean, we can use technologies to help, you know, disseminate our messages. And so our messages don't have to be, you know, example after example after example. And we can also contribute to our messaging through, let's say, classroom discussions and so forth. So we can streamline our messaging, be a little more efficient at it. You know, to say that every lecture is 3 to 4 minutes is inappropriate. Mm-hmm. It's to say, Can we break that lecture up? Can we do different things?
Claire in Mandeville, Louisiana. Claire, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I was wondering how they guarantee that all the children have the technology at home. Like, say, low-income children may not have a computer or an internet connection. So do they survey all the children and make sure they have those technologies? And if not, do they provide them?
Good question, Claire. Greg Green, how about it? What do you do for the child that just does not have access at home?
Well, I mean, we had to come up with solutions around that because not all our students have access to the internet. So, yeah, we have computer labs and we have computers that are. We're not a one-to-one school. We just put in wireless this year, so you know that's new. And so we had to come up with creative solutions. And what we did is we offered, let's say, tutoring before and after school. We offered in our computer labs. We offered opportunities to go to, you know, watch video at lunchtime and so forth. So, you know, we also sometimes, if the video was short and concise, we would show it in class at the beginning of class. And so all students were able to see it before we actually started the activity.
But it does sound as though those who don't have easy, good, dependable access to the web, the internet at home, would be at a disadvantage.
No, I mean, because we supply, just like if a student, same thing as saying a student doesn't have a calculator at home, then they can't do math. Well, now most classrooms in today, have a set of calculators that are available for students, graphing calculators. And so we don't stop teaching math, and we don't start going using the calculator. What we do is we start using the resources that our tax dollars already pay for.
Richard Halverson, where do you think this is taking us? If more schools begin to pick this up, what's the path that they're stepping onto?
I think they're stepping onto a really interesting path of empowering students, actually. If you look at savvy high school kids, they already assemble flipped classroom environments for themselves. Kids come home, do their chemistry homework. They've heard the chemistry teacher talk about the Krebs cycle or whatever. They go at home and they find a Brightstorm video on the Krebs cycle. They do their homework together on GChat. They live in digital worlds where they share information from multiple sources as well as the school's information. And I think the flipped classroom, the dominance or the coming use of flipped classrooms in high schools helps share those kinds of skills among all the students. Because, you know, face it, most adults who work in the knowledge world, we already live in flipped classroom work worlds where we use any number of digital resources to get our own work done. And the more that we can teach students the norms for how to look at information online and then integrate that into an in-person discussion, the better we'll be teaching them for 21st century jobs.
Diana, what do you think? Is that what this is, sort of the unbuckling of old pedagogy here? You're going to kind of push students out onto the web and have them just discover more there, whether it's prepackaged for them or not, then come in together and work toward refining their understanding?
I think that we're definitely moving in that direction, but the problem oftentimes with flipped is that we got caught up in our old kind of the old paradigm of thinking about what school is, and we're I was just talking to a friend of mine, Mr. Chase, who's in Colorado, and he said, you know, it's a new way of doing, but not a new way of thinking about what we're doing, and that's where we get stuck. We're still stuck with the lecture dichotomy and what you do at home and what you do at school. The thing I know kids are going to need to do is be able to both consume, organize, and vet massive amounts of information, and then be resilient through the process of learning, relearning, unlearning, and moving forward. And that's what we need to be doing with our kids. And whatever moves us in that direction is a positive move.
Well, we see a lot of old patterns maybe breaking loose and in motion, fluid here, flipping kind of one big rubric for that. Fascinating to see things on the move. Diane Laufenberg with Inquiry Schools. Thank you very much for being with us today, Diana.
Thank you.
Richard Halverson at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Thank you, Professor Halverson.
Thank you.
And Greg Green at Clintondale High School. Principal, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
This is On Point.